Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is the Savage Nation, and of course the lead story today is that there was a conservative convention this weekend, but true conservatives were not invited because they were too conservative. I mean, if you mentioned borders, language, or culture, you were, well, one of the people not permitted through the door. Now, if you were a Beltway fake Republican, if you're one of those people who support Republicans but pretend now you're a conservative, well, it was just a smooth sailing. We had Rush Limbaugh. Now, remember, this is the man who said this is the man, Rush Limbaugh, who did not say a bad word about George Bush for 7.5 years. Now he's the head of the conservative convention, using my phrase, porculous, which I just love. There was John Bolton, former U.N. ambassador, talked to talk about Iran, but he didn't walk the walk when he was ambassador. And so now he's walking out in the cold. And now Iran has enough uranium to build a nuclear bomb. Thank you, John Bolton. Who else was at the CPAC convention? Why, there was Mike Huckabee. He couldn't win the Republican nomination. He didn't even clear 5-6 points. But now Mike Schmuckabee is back to tell us how conservative he is. Okay, yeah. Then there was Newt Gingrich, the Newt, the old Newt, the Beltway Newt. The problem with Gingrich is that he has too much belly and not enough fire. And then there was Ann Coulter. We don't know whether she's the lady of the right or lady of the night. You'll have to decide. The fact of the matter is these people are the reason the Republicans lost. Not one of them mentioned borders, language, or culture. Not one of them mentioned borders, language, or culture at a so-called conservative convention. We're also going to talk about other topics here in the Savage Nation that are on michaelsavage.com, which I'm not going to read to you now. Many of you just go right to it and see what's up there. But I'm going to talk about something that's very much on my mind, and that is stress. The highest stress in your life, and I'll tell you why. I'm going out of my mind with stress. I'm in the midst of arranging to move across the country, either on Friday or Saturday. I've got to move a number of people, a number of poodles, a number of a number of weapons, and I'm going out of my mind. From 1 minute to the next, I'm waking up 3 a.m. Now, don't forget this, and don't forget that, and don't forget to do this with your boat. Don't to turn off the Seacock. Call up the mechanic, make sure he comes down and do the... What about your car? Do you need a trickle charger? You're not going to be back for 4-6 weeks. Make sure that you get the trickle charger. Oh, yes, lock the door, bolt the gate, put on the alarm. Oh, yes, don't forget to pick the vegetables out of the garden and make sure they come in a cooler. You don't want to throw organic. You don't want to throw away organic vegetables. And by the way, did you tell the gardener to turn the water on after the rainstorm because the sun is coming? Did you tell the gardener that? Yes, did you tell? I mean, it's unbelievable to me. So I looked up the Holmes and Ray Stress Scale, which is a list of stressful life events that can contribute to illness. And the number one item on a stress scale that can contribute to illness is the death of a spouse. And it's listed by number of life change units. The highest stress you can have in your life, they say, is the death of a spouse. The next highest stress is divorce. The third highest stress is marital separation. And here it comes. The fourth highest stress is imprisonment, which of course applies to over 1 million Americans. We have more Americans in prison proportionate to the population. We have the highest number of people in prison of any nation on earth, which means we are a police state, which means the drug war failed, which means the drug war needs to end, which means that although marijuana is a toxic, dangerous gateway drug, we need to decriminalize, not legalize, marijuana. There's a big difference between decriminalizing and legalizing, which I'll talk about at another time. The fifth highest contributor to illness in terms of a stress on a Holmes and Ray stress scale. Remember, number one is the death of a spouse. Number two is divorce. Number three is marital separation. Number four is imprisonment. Number five is death of a close family member. Number six, personal injury or illness. Next, marriage, dismissal from work. Listen to this one. Marital reconciliation is in the top 10. In other words, it's not bad enough you have a stress from breaking up. It gets worse when you get back together. Well, not as worse, but it's another stress. Retirement in the top 10. What other stresses have you experienced in your life that have affected your illness? If you had to rank the worst stresses in your life, what were they? Do you know that on this list, change in residence is number 20? Okay, so thank God I'm on number 20. I'm changing residence right now. I'm moving across the country. Whether it's temporary or permanent is another story, but I'm moving. I have never been through such madness in my adult years. I mean, I've moved before. When I was younger, I moved all the time. It was like the grapes of wrath. In order to get a job, I have moving trucks and packing and this and that. It's never been as complicated as now because I'm building a new studio by telephone across the country. Go try to build a radio studio that should be waiting for you in a house that you have acquired in another state. Go try to do that. Luckily, I have some good engineers and good people out there with the equipment ordered 6 weeks ago. But it's astounding to me how complicated this really is. I'm getting one beautiful part about all of this is that because of the internet and because people can use iPhones to take pictures in the house while talking to me, they're emailing me pictures of various rooms and how the desk is, and I'm saying, put the computer here. I want the wires to go there. Can't you cut a hole in that cabinet here? This is beautiful. In the past, obviously, we couldn't do it. There's so many advantages to modern technology. I would say that's one of them, and it certainly reduces stress. Nevertheless, it's trying to balance the moving. It's a tremendous phenomenon for me right now, and it's driving me crazy. For example, first I was going to go Saturday. Then because of logistics reasons, I had to go Friday. Then the guy says to me, well, if you can't go Friday at a certain time, you have to go Thursday. I'm going on somebody's private aircraft, so there's a lot of logistics involved. The pilots have to get into this place that I'm going to 14 hours before they get to the next place. So, FAA rules, they can't fly if it's 14 and a half hours, 13 and a half hours. So I got to leave in the time in the morning when there's a rush hour from Oakland, California, which I don't want to do because I hate driving in traffic. What's the point of going altogether? And so I'm calling and saying, okay, cancel Friday, let's go Saturday. Take me off the Gulfstream and put me on a citation. I don't want to be on a citation, put me on a this. So then I'm making decisions that could cost me my life, and I don't even know what plane I'm on. And so you think that there's no stress, you're crazy. That's why I'm saying to you, I want to talk about stress. What is the greatest stress you've had in your life? Is it losing your job? Is it losing your 401k? Is it listening to Rush Limbaugh at a conservative convention not saying borders, language, or culture? Is it listening to another swami little would-be Hollywoody standing up there pretending that she's against Hollywoodies when her only dream is to be a Hollywoodie or date Hollywoodies? What is the greatest stress you've had in recent times? You know, things are so bad in terms of stress level that I did something Friday after the show that I haven't done in years. I never go to the movies. I don't like the coughing. I don't like the perfume. I don't like the heads in front of me. I don't like guys kicking me from behind. In other words, I'm a very edgy personality. I don't like movie theaters. I hate them. So I'd rather watch a movie at home. All right, I love movies. I mean, I admit it to you. I'm not hiding anything, and I'm not ashamed of it. I still think that they're the greatest form of entertainment in your own bedroom. Now, I go to a movie to see a movie called Gomorrah, Friday night. Gomorrah is set in Naples, and it's about the Naples Mafia working in Naples. It is so great. I didn't know whether to leave or stay. The reason I didn't want to leave, this was not Goodfellas. This was not The Sopranos. This is not a bunch of Goombas killing someone and going out and having beer and a steak in a steak and ale house. This is not a fake gangster going to a psychiatrist. This is not about guys laughing when they shoot someone in the head. These guys, when they shoot someone in the head, there's no change of expression. They didn't do it because they love shooting someone. They didn't do it because they thought that it made them macho. They did it because it was business and it had to be done, and they were as much pleased as disgusted with themselves if you read their faces. In fact, the actors in Gomorrah, I don't know whether they're real or they're actors. That's how good it was. It's so grim. It's so gritty. It is so horrible to believe that people live like this in Naples, Italy, in this time and place, that I highly recommend the movie for those of you who want to see what is as close to a documentary, I think. Of course, nothing is a documentary, because I know that from my years as an anthropologist, we learned one rule, which is that the minute you bring yourself into a village, you change the dynamics of the village. So nobody's ever seen actual native life and reported on it accurately, because the minute the visitor gets to the village changes. They start reacting to him or to her. So anytime an anthropologist tells you they've been to New Guinea in 1950 and this is what it was, and they're giving you an image of what life in New Guinea was in 1950 with an anthropologist who was a white guy from Brooklyn with a PhD from Harvard. But they're not telling you what life was like before a white guy from Brooklyn wound up there, because they're putting on an act for you, in other words. Same with documentary filmmakers. They may tell you this is reality, but when have you seen a reality show that's reality? What lunatic would want cameras in their house other than a narcissistic egomaniac? So again, there's no such thing as a reality television show. You're not seeing reality. Reality is you in bed worrying about your existence. Reality is you suffering because of this or for that, mentally, the other way. Reality is you in the bathroom by yourself. That's reality. Everything else is fiction. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Have you lost a husband or a wife? Have you been divorced? Have you been separated from your husband or wife? Have you been put in jail? Have you lost a close family member? Have you lost a child? Have you had a very severe injury? Have you been thrown out of work? Have you gotten back with your husband or wife? Have you retired? Has someone in your family gotten sick? Have you gotten pregnant? Do you have sexual difficulties? Has a new family member arrived in your house? How about your business? Is it in trouble? Are your finances in trouble? How about a new mortgage that you took on or you can't pay for? How about the number of arguments you're having with your spouse changing, getting worse? Has your mortgage been foreclosed? Has your child grown up and left you with an empty nest? Are you fighting with your in-laws? Are you fighting with your daughter? Are you fighting with your son? Or have you achieved something phenomenal and received an award for it? Did your wife or husband just begin working because you needed the money? How about when school begins or ends? How about trouble with your boss? How about a change in residence or moving? How about changing schools for your children? How about a change in church activities? How about a new mortgage? How about a change in your sleeping habits because of a new job? How about a change in eating habits? How about a vacation? How about Christmas time? How about a minor violation of law? Every one of these, let us say, events, life events, are considered stress. And there's a Holmes and Ray stress scale that lists 43 stressful life events that can contribute to illness. And I remember reading these years ago in the 80s because I hit three of them at once. I could not get a job because I was a white male. I was not of color. I was not gay. I was not an illegal immigrant. I was only an American white male with a straight-A average with a PhD, and I was told I could not work. That was the biggest stress I've ever had in my life when I hit up against the social engineering of the liberals in this country. At the same time, I lost a relative. Terrible things were happening. I had to move across the country, and et cetera. So those are the things that will break you down. But there are other things that aren't here. This is very American. None of these on the list, and I've asked you to call me with your greatest stress, and I know this is something that every one of you listening to this show right now, this is a mystery radio. Talk radio is a mysterious medium. I could be talking about CPAC or Obama, and I will. But, you know, I know that everyone listening to this show is not turning it off. You can't wait to hear what the other guy or woman has to tell you, because in your own heart, you know you'd like to call the show and tell us what it is that almost broke you down or did freak you out. I have a caller right now who's going to come on the show in a minute with a stress that is not even on the Holmes and Ray stress scale that I can imagine should be on there, but it just shows you how spoiled we are in America. Robert in San Diego, go ahead, please. What was the stress that you would say affected you the most that is not on that list?
All the ones you said, you know, they're all stressful, but the one I found the hardest, Dr. Savage, was coming back from combat and actually getting back, just being, you know, in that situation, being just coming back and being just a civilian and getting back into the normal daily routine of going to work, and just that, for me, was extremely...
And you came back from where? From which theater of operation?
From Iraq, sir.
And that obviously is a big adjustment. I mean, but what about a cop shooting somebody in the midst of a crime? That becomes a major league because they start questioning the cop whether he should be thrown in jail or not for doing his job. If the cop ran away for a hydration break, like most of the people they're hiring now, conveniently get sick when there's a fire, they can't even lift a ladder, if you know what I'm talking about. If the cop ran away, it's not a stress. But if he stands up there and fights with the bad guy and shoots him, how about that for a stress, Robert?
I absolutely agree, Dr. Savage.
Thank you. Okay. Well, there it is. We're getting down to brass tacks here. What was your biggest stress? Or what do you want to talk about? The CPAC conference? You want to talk about that? I mean, I couldn't believe it. I listened to the speeches. Mike Huckabee, Newt Gingrich, Rush Limbaugh did not once say borders, language, culture. All I kept saying was, we need our conservative principles. Only we conservatives can beat them liberals. Are you kidding me? Newt Gingrich as a conservative? Newt Gingrich promised us a contract for America, if you remember, and what we wound up with was 1 out of 10. That's Newt Gingrich's idea of a contract, is that you get 10% of what he offers you. Maureen in New York, WOR. Go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Michael, I thought you were going to say about moving being one of the top 10 because it nearly killed me.
It's horrible. I mean, I've done it in my life when I was younger, but I'm doing it right now. It's driving me out of my mind.
No, and you just say, what can I do without? I won't do it again.
Exactly. Here look, I'm not even selling the house I'm in, okay? But I'm saying, what should I take? This picture, that picture. I'm going through family pictures now, back to my deceased brother. I don't know what to leave and what to take.
Well, photographs, of course. That's the worst thing people lose in a photo.
Yes, but you have to start saying, which of them do I want to take to the new place in the new on the desk? Do I leave? Do I take? Do I take them now? I mean, you're so cemented into a place at a certain point, you don't know what to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, good luck.
I'll tell you what straightens me out. I watch World War II movies about whole populations being bombed out of their cities. Or I watch the Siege of Stalingrad when the Nazis killed about 3 million Russians when they took over, when they were stampeding through Russia, and they killed men, women, and children and starved them to death. And then I realized this is nothing. It's a cakewalk. And that's the problem with being an American, is we're all spoiled. We have no context. That's the reality of it. It's one of the reasons I'm obsessed with watching a military history or a history channel in general. The things that human beings have lived with are beyond comprehension for we spoiled, lily-white Americans.
Savage.
The brand needs help. The brand needs work. There's no doubt about that. I'm not trying to sell it. What I'm trying to make it is valuable and something that people can look at and consider. And I think that we do have something to say on some very serious issues that touch a lot of people on empowerment and ownership and opportunity. And I'm going to make sure we say it.
See, Michael Steele doesn't know what he's talking about. He's the wrong man for the job. They should throw him out. This is the Savage Nation. Michael Steele, I don't know him from a hole in the wall, but I can tell you right now he's way over his head. And the fact of the matter is he doesn't mention borders, language, or culture. Where's the conservatism in it? Where's the meat? Where's the beef here? There's no beef. It's all white bread. Now, here you got a guy, Michael Steele, the head of the Republican National Committee, attacking talk radio in the form of Limbaugh. And he's saying that it's ugly and this and incendiary. And he himself gets up there and says, we have a brand problem. The brand needs work. You are the wrong man for the job, Steele. You're the reason that the Republicans are never going to be reelected. In fact, if they keep picking stooges like Michael Steele, who apparently meet certain, let us say, protocols that the Republicans think are necessary to get back in the game, they're never going to get reelected. That's the exact opposite of what we need. Not one of the strategists in the Republican Party understands why they lost. And that's why they're hopeless and clueless and why they should have lost. The fact of the matter is a real Republican doesn't exist. When I say Republican, I think conservative. I don't think Nelson Rockefeller, check pants Republican. The fact of the matter is that's what we have right now. And the fact of the matter is, again, that Michael Steele doesn't mention borders, language, or culture. Instead, he talks about the brand needs help. You're not selling a brand, Steele. You're trying to save a country. Now you know why I wasn't there. Houston, Texas, Jacob, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. I was watching the CPAC convention thing, and they listed like the top five, you know, conservative figures in the media, and you know, your name didn't even come up, and it's just ridiculous. Like, you know, now that I think about it, you never get mentioned anywhere in on any of the talk shows or any of the news stations. Why is that? Why do you think that is?
Because my headline is quite simple. Savage not invited to conservative convention. He's considered too conservative. Do you understand?
Well, it makes no sense. No, I don't understand, because they should, you know, what you're saying, you know.
I challenge anyone listening to this show to quote one thing said by one of the talkers that bordered on borders language or culture, which to me defines what a nation is and to me is what needs to be talked about in order to save the nation. Did any of them talk about borders language or culture? I don't think so. And that's why they didn't want me there. The fact of the matter is, I don't know that I would have gone. Truthfully, I don't go to conventions. I'm not on the East Coast. I don't like to go to these things. I'm not good at rubber chicken dinners to begin with. I don't like crowds. And so I don't know that I would have gone. But that's not the issue. The issue is when you have people like Newt Gingrich invited or people along the lines of whatever his name is, Huckabee, who was given a thumbs down by the people, what can you expect to come out of it? That's the whole point. We do need some incendiary rhetoric right now. The fact is that Michael Steele doesn't understand that. The only thing that can save America is a little passion, not a little more nonsense. And that's what we're getting. But that's why I'm saying I'd rather talk about the Holmes and Ray stress scale and what it is that stressed you out, you know, at your event, in your life, rather. And we're going to rank them right now. Lynn in Palm Beach is next up. Welcome to the call, to the show, Lynn. What's on your mind?
Mr. Savage, there's a daily stress level that I have at 6:10 p.m. when I turn on my radio, and your voice is not there. And number two is dealing with incompetence. You hire a painting company that you've dealt with for years, and you have to babysit every second because the minute you turn your back, they tell you everything's covered. You walk in and there's two.
Yeah, no, I know that. I just had that with contractors. I'm so fed up. I said, cover my steps. And I come in and the steps are marked with black, dirty boots.
You said every minute.
No. Oh, you have to stand over them or they're not even going to show up on the job altogether. Contractors love to book you, tear your house open and go start another job and leave you ripped open. I would like to sue them for the next time this happens. I'm getting so pissed off at contractors that the next time I see this happen, I will sue them. What you got to do is put a time clause in there. You finish this job in a certain amount of time. You know, here where I live in the Bay Area of California, you've got the worst ripoff artists in America. They start jobs. It takes them 2 years to do a little stinking job in a three-bedroom, two-bath house. Why? Because the people are sheeple. They don't stand up to them. They built the Golden Gate Bridge in less time than it takes to rebuild a house over here in this county. They open up 12 houses and come around when they want. I'm sick of this. It's one of the reasons I'm leaving the state. We have the highest income in the income tax in the state of America, of any state in America. And what does it go for? The roads are broken. The roads are broken. The schools are broken. Tell me what works in the state of California that isn't conducted by a private enterprise. Virtually nothing. We have the most brokenest state in America with the highest taxes. And they want to raise taxes. And, you know, an article just came out confirming what I've been telling you, which is that these greedy losers who are running the states are raising taxes, saying they can't cut services. What a bunch of nonsense. Services? What do you mean services? Your roads are broken. You haven't even patched the broken roads. What services are you talking about? The people have had enough. We need not only a tea party, we need actual more than a tea party in this country to save the country, but I'm not going to go into that. I'm not a revolutionary, only a talk show host. So San Diego, Mike, welcome to the Savage Nation.
I tell you, Dr. Savage, the most stressful thing I'm encountering right now is I'm a retired Marine. My wife worked part-time for 10 years. She put away 40% of her income into a 401k plan. Worked hard, saved hard, and we raised three kids, and now we got one getting ready to go off to college. And after saving 40% of her income, and I know she only made $10 an hour, but you know what? It adds up after a period of time, only to discover now that somehow she's missing $35,000 that she worked for 8 years to save.
And then what do you mean? Who stole the 401k?
Well, it was with Fidelity, but what pisses me off is I see AIG just got another $80 billion today, and so we're sitting there.
That's right. You see, if you're a gangster in New York in a silk suit with your own jet, and you can grease the skids in Washington, they'll keep your jet flying forever. But if you're a Marine who served America, they'll take you to the cleaners. That is disgraceful, Mike. So now what, you're facing no 401k at all?
Well, what's left of my wife's 401k, and of course, I did my 20 years, and I served in the Gulf War, and I'm on the disability, but they've rated me as my body is 92% disabled, not 95% disabled. Therefore, my daughter can't receive the additional funding that she...
Well, of course, because actually you didn't get killed, and the military would then say you're a good man if they put a little flag and send it home to your wife. That's disgusting. Who's the one who rated you at 92, not 95? Some little pimple-headed guy there who did the review? Who did it to you?
Some little geek, Brad, gave me a 5-minute examination and said, miraculously, my eyes are better than they were 8 years ago when I retired, even though I'm on my third set of prescription lenses since August.
Well, what do you mean? You're 92% disabled from what? From working from a war wound or what, Mike?
Well, from a compilation of different things, through degenerative disc disease, through diplopia, exploria, psoriatic arthritis. I mean, there's 23 different things I'm labeled as having.
Would you say that any of them are related to your experience in the military?
All of them are service-connected, according to the VA.
You served in combat, Mike?
Sure, I did. 9 months. I was in the first Gulf War.
Well, Mike, here's what I'm going to do, and I don't want to do this on the air because I don't want to be deluged with other people who have also been injured or hurt. I can't do it for a lot of people. Stay on the line, Mike. Email me. I'm going to see if we can help you out some way or another, okay? That's all I'm going to say on the air, and we'll see if we can do anything. I mean, because I'm not going to let this go by. There are so many stories of people like this gentleman who served this country loyally only to get shafted at the end, while the bankers, the insurance executives, and the other gangsters are getting away with murder, virtual murder. And while Obama and his friends are partying in the White House on Wednesday nights, having a grand old time. You're not seeing much of that, are you? 1-800-449-8255, phone number, michaelsavage.com, website. Calls from around America on the biggest stresses in your life. Sal in New York from WOR Land. Go ahead, please. What's the biggest stress that hit you?
Well, Dr. Savage, I was let go of my job in October. Now my severance is running out, and I'm going to have to cash in my pension just to survive and keep up with the mortgage. And I'm also going to lose my.
What kind of job did you have?
I worked at a bank for 18 years.
Well, and they just closed the bank, or they fired you, or a bunch of people, or what?
No, they're wiping out all the jobs in the Northeast and shipping them off to Mumbai or the Philippines. So
I see. In other words, the call center's in Mumbai where you get somebody doing your job, while the gangsters at the top are still flying in their Gulf Streams, right?
Right. It was all through the merger. So,
sure. What's important for the merger is that the gangsters on top continue to have their perks and that Madoff continues to live in his penthouse. Well, so what are you going to do about all of this?
Well, if I cash in my pension, I'm going to do 30% in taxes and fees for that. So I'm going to job fairs. They send you job fairs, but they have 10 jobs for 1,000 people that show up. And you have to wait in line and hand in your resume and get a 30-second interview. Well, look,
this is what's going to probably become the biggest problem in America right now. I would think I listed death of a spouse, divorce, marital separation, imprisonment, personal injury. But the fact of the matter is dismissal from work probably is going to go to the top of the list. Because, I mean, I can relate to this. I know what it's like to work all your life and wind up thrown out of a job for reasons not to do with you or your performance. I'm sorry to hear it. There's nothing I can do. I wish I had enough money and enough resources to be like Obama and give away taxpayers' money. I wouldn't give it to England. I wouldn't give it to Romania. I wouldn't give it to Germans. I wouldn't give it to Poles. I wouldn't give it to Italians. Did you know that your great friend Obama, the great American... Do you know that his Marine One helicopters are being made not in America? Did you hear that story? Go to michaelsavage.com if you think I'm making it up. That's right, Obama the liar. Obama, the biggest liar in the history of the presidency, who said that there'd be no earmarks, he would go over it point by point, line by line, is permitting 9,000 earmarks in the budget. That's what we know of, 9,000 earmarks. Now, to add insult to injury, the great Obama, the great Buy American, the great trade unionist, the great man of the people, the man who gets down with his friends in the White House on Wednesday in the White House and has parties, the man's Marine One helicopters are being built in Europe, primarily from Italian parts. You tell me that I don't know what's going on in this country? Never in the history of America have so few with so low qualifications held so much power over your life. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Want stress? Yeah, I'm going to give you some stress right now. We're talking about the biggest stresses in your life, death of a spouse, death of a child, sexual difficulties, being put in jail, getting a divorce. Here's a little stress for you. This came out minutes ago. Your friend Obama has just said he will drop building a missile shield for Europe if Iran is stopped by Russia. Let me repeat that. U.S. President Barack Hussein Obama just made a proposal to Russia about Iran. And he said that the United States will not deploy a missile base in Poland. The U.S. will not deploy radar in the Czech Republic. And Russia is thrilled. Russia says that the missile shield is a threat to its national security. Obama said, okay, we'll appease you. We won't put up the missile shield. We won't put up a missile base. Would you please intervene with the madman of Iran and ask him to not build a nuclear weapon? And we'll see, of course, the Russian will say, sure, Obama, we'll be very happy to help you with this. That's great. Now, there are several threads in this story that are worth talking about. The number one thread is that apparently Ronald Reagan was right when he said Star Wars works, and the liberal lying scum were wrong when they said Star Wars didn't work. Apparently Star Wars works so well that Russia's afraid of the Star Wars system because this way they won't have access to blowing Europe off the map. Now, how in the world could that be a threat to the national security of Russia to have a missile shield in the Czech Republic? How is it possible when you have a missile shield over a whole area called Europe that that's a threat to the national security of Russia? It's not a threat. It means they would like to continue to blackmail Europe. It means that Putin would like to continue to have the opportunity to frighten the Europeans into submission. And now that he has a counterpart in Barack Hussein Obama, a worldwide socialist network is emerging in front of your eyes. I told you that he was a Marxist. I warned you he was a Marxist. His policies are Marxist. And now his appeasement of the number one Marxist nation on earth, or the number two if you want to consider China a Marxist nation. It's really not a Marxist nation. It's a neo-Marxist nation along the lines of what we have emerging in this country. But the fact of the matter is, let's not split hairs with definitions. You want agita? You want stress? I just gave it to you. Your president has just said that he will capitulate to Russia and not build a radar stations in the Czech Republic. He will not deploy a missile base in Poland to protect the Europeans from a potential Iranian or Russian strike. If Putin agrees to rein in the Hitler of our time, Ahmadinejad. So we just lost another, shall I say, chess match. He, in other words, not only did he not even blink, Obama didn't even play the game. He gave up. So let's go back to the stresses in your life, the biggest stresses in your life. Here's a sad one, Houston, Texas. Steve, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, Michael, sorry, I tuned in a bit late. I didn't hear where you who developed that listing of stresses that could cause illness.
The highest, I was reading this from the Holmes and Ray stress scale of 43 stressful life events that can contribute to illness. They say the number one is death of a spouse, then divorce is two, and marital separation is three, imprisonment is four. What would you rank the highest?
I bet a loss of a child would be absolutely second to none. I mean, that happened to me. I did hear that down the list, but it should be like first,
I agree with you. I don't know why it's so far down the list. I certainly think the death of a child is higher than the death of a spouse, Steve.
Yeah, it's very tough, but I mean, like your situation, deciding what pictures to take to across country, like in 100 years, that won't matter to really any of us. But a loss of a child, that's really tough. And in my case, it was my stepchild. My wife's son was killed in a construction accident. And it just it takes an extreme toll. We're just.
I hear you. No, I'm glad you called on it. I think that the list should be altered. Frankly, I think that the loss of a child has always seemed to me to be the highest stress. But I guess you have to be married and have children to understand that. And I guess some of the psychologists who create this are not married with children. That's a pregnant statement. I think most of them aren't married with children. I would think that most of them have partners, about five a night, if you get the drift.
Well, it's been a while.
You see, a lot of this is cockamamie. You got guys calling themselves psychiatrists or psychologists. They have five partners a night in a bathhouse, and they call themselves they're going to tell you what a stress is. They don't know what a child is. They never heard of one. They hear someone else has one. I love when they tell you that they have a niece, and they know what it is to raise a child. Yeah, they know what a niece is. Los Angeles, KGIL. Ian, what's the biggest stress in your mind?
Well, right now, Dr. Savage, the stress, I'm a police officer down here in L.A., and my partner and I are under investigation for doing our job and taking down a violent gang member.
Oh, sure. Well, the gang members probably have greater access to the mayor of Los Angeles and the police chief than the police do.
Well, I can't make a whole lot of comments about that, sir, but that and, you know, we're picking up. We're at the end of this year. We lived in California our whole lives. My girlfriend's from Marin County up near you, and we're done with this state. We just can't do this.
It's horrible. California is sinking into the sea. It's a social cesspool. But financially, it's a physical wreck because Schwarzenegger was the biggest fraud that ever invaded the governor's office. Schwarzenegger, once he hired Ms. Kennedy, who was the chief of staff to the previous administration, I knew the fix was in. But you're saying being a cop in L.A. is a pretty high stress. I would agree with you because you guys have been put on the firing line, and then when you fire back, you are called the bad guys.
Well, not only that, I mean, I came out of the Marine Corps a year ago, and I did two tours in Iraq. So my blood pressure has been a little raised for the last couple of years, and this, you know, it's just kind of getting to a point where I'm like, do I need this stress? What do I need to do something else?
Well, you know, Ian, I've said that combat vets should be put on the top of the scale of hiring in police departments across America. Frankly, I still believe it, but I'm not so sure that it's a job that a combat veteran wants to subject himself to. Maybe fighting Al-Qaeda in Iraq has less danger to it than fighting gangbangers in L.A.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
More than any other time in history, conservative principles are absolutely essential to keeping America strong and prosperous and free. Now, with all that's happening here at home, there's some who've forgotten that we're at war, that Iran and its jihadist surrogates are killing our sons and daughters overseas, and they want to do it here as well. I'm pleased that our troops are coming home in larger numbers from Iraq. But let there be no confusion on this point. It is in spite of Barack Obama's stance on Iraq, not because of it, that the troops are coming home in victory.
All right. Play Blue Monday. Do me a favor. That would be better than the Romney speech.
Blue Monday. How are you, Blue Monday?
We're talking about the irrelevant CPAC convention that occurred over the weekend where various entertainers and other freaks of nature were appearing. And the fact of the matter is, you say, well, it's just sour grapes. You're wrong. Can you name one discussion that occurred there about the war on terror? Can you name one of these jingoistic fools who talked about the threat to free speech that is occurring in this country, as you know I have faced for the last couple of years? Can you name one of the jingoistic fools who appeared at CPAC over the weekend who talked about the invasion of the jihadists into America, the threats to our freedoms, the threats to America by the neo-Marxist Obama administration? No. So you see, Romney gets up there, he's a fine man, and he says conservative principles. What are those conservative principles? Did they discuss the conservative principles? Did any of them say immigrant? Did any of them say illegal immigrant? Did any of them talk about building a border fence? Did any of them mention that the issue of drugs and the drugs flowing over the border? I don't think so. And I will tell you right now that to me this event was a shame, and it was run by David Keene of the American Conservative Union, who frankly is another check pants Republican along the lines of either along the lines of George Bush or of a David Rockefeller or one of those types. The fact of the matter is I haven't heard of any discussion of any Islamic terrorist organizations. And even worse, they had a GOP operative, Grover Norquist, who has worked behind the scenes to help convicted Al-Qaeda fundraiser Al-Moody and Palestinian Islamic Jihad leader Sami Al-Aryan. He was there, Grover Norquist, given the honor of introducing John Boehner on Friday morning. So the fact of the matter is CPAC was a fraud. CPAC was a continuation of the Republican Party. And CPAC indicates to me that the Republican Party will go nowhere all over again. The only people who can win in the next election, whether it be local or state level or on a national level, will be those who understand the conservative issues, can articulate them, can raise the people's awareness of them, and can motivate the people as to what Obama the liar is actually doing to America. Remember the motto of the Savage Nation: borders, language, culture. Borders, language, culture. Borders, language, culture. Not one of the clowns who spoke there that I know of mentioned borders, language, or culture. All I kept saying at the CPAC meeting was, conservative principles. We need conservative principles. Well, unfortunately, there's more to conservative principles than saying the words conservative principles. This is the Savage Nation. I'm here for you. The phone lines are open at 1-800-449-8255. The website has, what other stories do I have on the website? Let me go look right now while you're calling and such. We can go on to michaelsavage.com and I'll see what's up there for you to peruse before, during, and after the show. Obama to sign budget despite earmarks. That's right. He lied and the economy died. He'll break a campaign pledge against congressional earmarks and sign a budget bill laden with millions of dollars in lawmakers' pet projects, 6,000 earmarks. Topic number two on my website. Durbin admits race was a factor in seating Burris in the Senate. Really? Really? You're kidding me. Durbin is admitting something that's honest? That's almost impossible. Savage not invited to conservative convention because he was too conservative. Red flags raised by congressman's earmarks. That would be Representative Anthony Weiner in New York City from Brooklyn. Brooklyn, New York. Representative Anthony Weiner is directing $238,000 of this year's federal budget to a Brooklyn nonprofit whose backers have showered him with campaign contributions. So more for a more open, honest administration. Pricey new presidential choppers not made in U.S. of A. Did you hear that one? President Barack Obama's entreaties to buy American to improve the economy apparently doesn't include the fleet of new Marine One helicopters he'll soon be shuttled around in. Instead, they're being made in Europe and finished in America. There's your Obama at work. But he's having a good time on Wednesdays in your White House. He's having good parties in the White House on Wednesday. That's the important thing. With every leftist that he can find around the world coming in to get down with him. Here's another story for you on MichaelSavage.com. It's coming up soon. Will black robes steal 7 million votes and approve homosexual marriage? Ha! What do you think? You think those black robes care about the voters? I don't. And I think that the black robes have been sold out to the gay mafia for a very long period of time. The only question is, what will the 7 million voters do once the black robes steal their vote? Well, I'll let you decide because you're the 7 million, not me. Obama's Kenyan family poses for White House photo. Obama's Kenyan family poses for... I wonder if they're going to have the stimulus money over there in Kenya. Embraced by Mrs. Obama, who traveled to Washington from her government-subsidized house in England, the president proudly posed an official reception for the family. Well, there's nothing wrong with that. The only question is the stimulus money going to go to Kenya now? If you'd like to comment on any of these stories, you have another one for you. The Nation of Islam has embraced Obama. Farrakhan and the Nation of Islam have vigorously supported Obama, even when Obama's campaign tried to distance itself from the 75-year-old controversial Louis Farrakhan. Well, as far as I'm concerned, there's no distance between the two. As far as I'm concerned, there's no distance between Obama and Reverend Wright. I think that it's all one and the same. That's my opinion. It's one man's opinion. There are many, many, many other stories that I'd like to talk about. I mean, we could talk about this, that, food, stresses of life. Here's another one for you. This one is directed to Al Gorleone, the head of the Gorleone Crime Syndicate, who has been lying about global warming so long it's become the truth for the idiots who voted for Obama. D.C. is the site of a major snowstorm, and also today the largest public protest of global warming in history. Is that ironic? No, it's fitting. I'll be right back. Basically, the Republican Party is Democrat light. It's malarkey right now. And CPAC was really not too far from the Republican positions, which are no positions at all. Did they talk about the drug war spilling over from the Mexican border? Did they talk about the illegal immigration juggernaut? Did they talk about the invasion of the jihadis? Did they talk about the spread of Sharia law? Did they talk about borders, language, and culture? I don't think so. All I heard was the rhetoric of we need conservative principles without actually articulating them. It's classic malarkey. So that's why I'm telling you, don't take it for, don't take it to heart what they were talking about. I love that CNN holds up a false argument that suddenly they were too conservative and too incendiary. What did they actually say that was so incendiary? Did anyone say what I just said? What I just said isn't even incendiary. What I just said is reality, not incendiary. Incendiary is not talking about what is happening to this country under Obama and the false Republicans. That's really incendiary is what they're doing to this economy. You want to talk about incendiary? Here's an incendiary story for you from the Associated Press. Came out minutes ago. Madoff seeks to hold on to his Manhattan penthouse, and an additional $62 million in assets. Why? He wants to keep his $7 million Manhattan penthouse and an additional $62 million in assets, saying they are unrelated to the fraud that authorities say cost victims more than $50 billion. In court papers filed today in U.S. District Court in Manhattan, which is an oxymoron, by the way, when you say U.S. District Court in Manhattan, it's an oxymoron. Say the ancient Roman courts or the ancient Sanhedrin, where if you smear them off with a candelabra, you can get what you want. Madoff and his lawyer claim that the apartment, $45 million in municipal bonds, and $17 million more in a separate account all belong to his wife, Ruthie. Now, as far as I'm concerned, Ruthie is not innocent. As far as I'm concerned, Ruthie is guilty until proven innocent. As far as I'm concerned, both Ruthie and Bernie should have been indicted by now. Ruthie should be in sackcloth along with Bernie. But no, they're living in a penthouse. So they figure if they get away with that, because they have such a smart lawyer, they can now say we want to keep the apartment and an additional $62 million because it has nothing to do with the fraud that we allegedly committed. You see, the bonds are in an account held by Ruthie Madoff at Comad Securities Corp. and about $17 million held by her in a Wachovia bank account. And his lawyer says they are unrelated to the alleged Madoff fraud, and only Ruth Madoff has a beneficial interest in these assets, close quote. Sorkin, the lawyer, declined to comment Monday. A court-appointed trustee overseeing the liquidation of Madoff's assets has said the apartment and other property used to secure bail was off limits for now. Okay? The fix is in other words. But if there's a conviction, those assets and possibly property of Madoff insiders could be seized to help pay claims by alleged victims, which so far total about $1 billion. David Sheen, an attorney representing the trustee, said, "We are looking at every member of the Madoff family." Okay, yeah, we're looking. The only way to look at him is throw him in jail and look at him in jail. The information was contained in an order of consent asking a judge to grant the federal government authority to seek forfeiture of assets involved in any fraud. Trustee Irvin H. Picard has said that nearly $950 million in cash and security has been recovered for investors so far. As you know, the 70-year-old former NASDAQ chairman has been confined to his Manhattan penthouse under penthouse arrest since early December. Well, in America, as they say, the streets are paved with yolds. And also, there's another statement in America. For the right price, you can get away with murder. 1-800-449-825. What I'm going to ask you, do you think Madoff should be able to keep his apartment and $62 million? Only in America can he get away with a thing like this. Only in America could he still be in a penthouse. Only in America could a combat veteran from Iraq come back and have his 401k stolen by the government while Madoff is allowed to live in a penthouse. Only in America. The streets are paved with yolds. New York City. Nancy, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Mike. I like to say that the most stressful and depressive time in my life is after being the good, dutiful wife of almost 18 years. My heart was ripped out of my throat when my husband asked for that divorce. And divorce is like a living death.
Well, it's ranked up there as number two. The divorce after a number of years is ranked as number two. I don't want to go into the details. Was there another woman involved?
Well, yes, there was. And after I took care of his mother for 10 years, I got stepped on, and nicely so, and it hurt.
Well, let's look at it in a positive way. You know I have a dark sense of humor. At least he didn't run off. He didn't leave you for another man. Well, no, in America, that's a victory. At least he left you for another woman. You could thank God for that. I mean, if your husband left you for another man, then you'd really have self-doubt.
He was supposed to be wooing me, you know, his wife at the altar, remember me, hello, you know, not somebody in the office. His allegiance was to me, and if he had problems, he should have talked it over to me. You know, it's harder to get divorced. I mean, it's easier to get divorced in New York than it is to get married.
And how much money was involved? Did he take the money, too, or he left you with something?
Oh, he felt so guilty, he gave me what pittance was left, but that's not the issue. I married.
But he burned through it before he gave it to you, in other words.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to hear it. I agree, but this is a very high, it's high on the list. You're not saying anything that I would disagree with. It's as simple as that. 1-800-449-8255, York, Pennsylvania. Ed, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, I'd also like to comment. I lost a spouse. My wife of 22 and a half years died of cancer. So,
yeah, that was a bad one because you suffered with her for many years, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, she didn't last that long, 3 years. She died quickly.
Years or probably like 30 years.
Hard on her.
So you called about the disabled Marine, Ed. What was your point?
Well, I'm a disabled veteran, and I had to go through the same situation he did, and I was given 90% to begin with. He has to, first of all, get himself an attorney who's conversant with Veterans Administration laws and how to apply for reconsideration of their decision.
Absolutely. That's why I asked him to stay on the line. Guys, if he did, send me his email. I'm going to try to get him a lawyer. That's what I had in mind, Ed.
Yeah.
Which was to try to get the guy a lawyer to go back and appeal that disability rating. Thank you very much, Ed. I mean, I can't do this for everyone in America, but you know, he who saves a single life, it is though he has saved the entire world. I have to do it on a case by case basis. Justin in San Francisco, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Michael, thanks for putting me on. Just wanted to make a comment on this Bernie Madoff thing. For him to say that you keep that apartment and everything that, you know, he said, just because it's unrelated, kind of ridiculous. If I, you know, rob somebody and let's say a jewelry box, and I have to make restitution for that jewelry box, if I don't have the jewelry anymore, I still owe the money value back to the person. So
Of course you do. Of course you do. It doesn't matter where you have the money, or where you're keeping the money, or where you got the money. The fact is, if you're involved in a $50 billion fraud, what do you mean your wife's $62 million doesn't come from there? Where did it come from? The man transferred assets to his wife, in anyone's estimation. It's a standard operating procedure. Some of the other gangsters involved in this type of fraud, some of the banker gangsters, transferred their properties to their wife prior to an SEC investigation, which never came, because the SEC is as valuable as a piece of Swiss cheese with regard to an investigation. America is watching this, but you see most Americans are so involved in day-to-day survival. Who can keep up with the corruption? Can you really keep up with the amount of corruption that you see flowing down from the heights, from the elite, so to speak? Can you really keep up with it? I can't. And you get overloaded. Frankly, you just get overloaded and you say, well, let them take care of it. Let the authorities take care. What authorities? What authorities? The type Obama's appointing who don't pay their taxes? Who are now telling you how much tax you have to pay? What authorities like Geithner, who's running the Treasury, who sounded like a schoolboy who never balanced a checkbook or met a payroll? That's what you say, the authorities? What authorities? Which authority is looking at the Bernie Madoff who you trust? Which judge in New York do you think and you trust in the Bernie Madoff case? A judge in New York is an oxymoron in terms of, as far as I can tell. That's all, a judge in New York. Think of the Sanhedrin and 30 pieces of silver.
Savage!
You got to laugh. You got a blizzard in the East Coast now. You got Washington, D.C. drenched in snow, and you got the schmucks marching for global warming, standing in the sleet and the snow, screaming that we got to close it down. Listen to the schmucks now in Washington. We just got this.
Our stories, your stories, must echo every day in the halls of this Congress.
Yes, we can. Yes, we can. Yes, we can. Yes, we can.
Turn the schmucks off. They're in the middle of a blizzard talking about global warming. You know, I got to laugh. Every time there's a weather event, they make it into a story, these schmucks in the media now. I remember when I was a kid, there was a saying, March comes in like a lion and goes out like a lamb. And I used to think about it. What do you mean by that? As a child, March comes in like a lion and goes out like a lamb. Well, guess what? Here we are in the beginning of March. It's come in like a lion. And it'll go out like a lamb. Nothing's changed. But the schmucks in Washington are so drugged up, so brainwashed with their neo-Marxist rubbish, that they're standing in a blizzard screaming to shut down a coal plant because it's producing global warming. Al Gore, frankly, should be in prison for the hysteria he's induced in the world. Al Gore has caused more disruption in the world, particularly in the minds of these potheads, than anyone on the planet. I never heard anything like this. But this is it. As a child, March comes in like a lion, goes out like a lamb. I used to walk to school in a blizzard, and at the end of March, it was already springtime. I remember I was born March 31st, so I always knew that by the time my birthday came around, it would be spring. And it was true enough. The end of March was always like beautiful, already springy. You could smell the flowers were coming up. The beginning of March could often turn into a blizzard. All we're having now is traditional weather over the last 50, 60, 70 years has been a much like this in America. There's been no change whatsoever. It's all myth. It's all a lie. It's all an attempt to bamboozle your child. And your child is so brainwashed that they don't understand reality. Yeah, what's the difference? Is it any wonder that people don't know what's going on? Is it any wonder that we get a charlatan like this for president? He runs on a campaign that says we're going to have the most honest, open administration in history. Now he's passing a budget with 7,000 earmarks. He says we're going to have the most honest individuals working for the government. Not 50% of them paid their taxes at the top tier. It's unbelievable to me. I've never seen anything quite like the stupidity in the country today. That's why I say I got worked over it, up over it. So I even went to a movie Friday night. I meant to tell you I didn't finish reviewing it. The movie is they call it a documentary, but it isn't, called Gomorrah, about the Italian mafia in Naples. It was one of the grittiest films ever made. It did not romanticize the gangsters. That's why I liked it. It was not Scorsese's glorification. It was not Coppola's glorification. It was not everyone sitting around with Mamma Mia, with, you know, with nobility and dignity and nobility with special languages. It was nothing to do with that. It was horrible. It was horrible to watch. Just horrible to watch. But the faces of the people, I don't know whether they were actors or they were real, but do you remember in the original Godfather movie, there was a guy with the big neck, and he said nobody can... What was his name? What was the character? Not Clemenza. Not that one. Not the Jolly. Luca Brasi, but nobody can stop Luca Brasi. Well, let me take care of Luca Brasi. Remember they strangled him with the piano wire, and he got engorged? Remember that? All right, so Luca Brasi. Now, picture Luca Brasi in that characterization, the Godfather in GF1. Now magnify that by a factor of 100 in a real person's face who has no emotions whatsoever. It's the same face whether he's playing cards, smoking cigarettes, drinking a drink, or killing a kid 16 years old who's trying to encroach upon his territory. No change in his expression. I really got to tell you something. This is as close to a documentary, I would guess, but who knows what real is anymore. We don't know what real is. All I can tell you is that he put Scorsese, whoever did this in Italy, put Scorsese and Coppola to shame. What I liked about it is it didn't glorify the criminal lifestyle. This is what the kids who think they should be gangsters ought to watch. Because it's the movie's called Gomorrah, so it starts out, yeah, I love Gomorrah because it's not about Sodom and Gomorrah, but it may as well be. It's really about the Camorra, I believe, it's an underworld group in Naples, which are responsible for a lot of murders. But one of the most phenomenal parts of this is talking about the dumping of toxic waste by the gangs, or the garment industry in Naples, and how it's controlled, and how the prices are fixed, and when a Chinese guy comes in with his own factory and tries to steal a tailor from the Italian guy, I don't want to tell you what happens with that story, but you can pretty much figure that one out. It's got some comedic elements in it. But toward the end, I'm going to give things away. I don't want to give any more away. Do you have the trailer to Gomorrah? Play it right now in the Savage Nation.
Naples, one of the oldest cities in Italy, there's a war raging in the streets. Because one organization, the Camorra, has corrupted all levels of society. No one is safe. No one is spared. And everyone, from the youngest boy to the oldest man, knows they control everything and respect nothing. Gomorrah.
No, it's pretty. I didn't know. It went on and on and on. It's in black and white, and the cinematography is reminiscent in some ways of early Italian movies from the 50s. I'm trying to think of some of the filmmakers I grew up on in the Mayfair Theater in Queens. I can hardly remember their names by now. Pre-Antonioni, okay? Pre-Antonioni. Earlier than the early Fellini movies. And the humor in it even is unique. It approaches Fellini in some ways. It actually surpasses Fellini in some ways. So as I said, I went to a little theater here in San Francisco. You know, no one laughed. No one got ha-ha out of this. The audience was very sober, very serious. 20% European in the theater. And people sat through it like through a funeral dirge. But no one left. I was on the edge of my seat wanting to leave several times. It was so horrible. It wasn't that there was one murder after another. It was the grittiness of it. Let me give you an example of what I'm talking about, gritty. There's a guy who looks like a very charming businessman portrayed in this film, Gomorrah, about the underworld in Naples. His job is burying toxic waste in the countryside, the surrounding countryside. That's what he does. So he's got to find farmers who are willing to let him bury their toxic waste on his land. In one scene, they go to a rundown, beaten-up farm, and the old guy, who's like the patron of the farm, is dying in bed. His wife's holding his hand, his son is standing next to him, and they're bartering the price for dumping on an adjacent piece of land that he has to dump real toxic waste. In the middle of all of this, the number two guy in the dumping is a young guy who just got in with the older guy who's doing the dumping, and he doesn't like what he sees going on, but he doesn't say anything for obvious reasons. He goes out into the orchard, he sees an old woman, maybe in her 80s, she's standing in the rain picking peaches in an old broken-down orchard with, you know, decrepit-looking orchard. And he sees her picking, and he says to her, "Mama, come in, it's raining." And she looks up at him, and she's bewildered. And she calls him by a name like, let's say, Roberto. She says, "Roberto, how are you?" And he says, "No, I'm not Roberto, I'm Carlo." And she says, "No, Roberto, come taste my peaches." He says, "Mom," he doesn't even know her now. He says, "Roberto," he says, "Mama, come in, it's raining, you're going to catch a cold." So this little frail old lady comes up to him with a bushel of peaches, and she tenderly gives him the bushel of peaches. And it's a heartbreaking scene. He takes them from her, and he says, thank you very much. So now after, and he brings her into the house. After the other guy is through negotiating where to dump toxic waste on the farm, the more mature guy, he comes out, and they both, you know, smile and leave. And they drive down the road about 2 miles, and the older guy says, "Stop the car and throw them out." So the younger guy says, "What do you mean throw them out?" Can't you smell them? They stink. Meaning, the peaches are full of toxic waste, which is probably why the woman became senile. You get the whole thing? I mean, no one had to spell it out for me. This required like two cents worth of education, which I'm sure the morons protesting global warming wouldn't be able to figure out unless they had a diagram in translation and they were told that it was about toxic waste producing toxic peaches. So they drive down the road 2 miles. The older guy says, all right, throw them out, meaning on the roadside. The younger guy says to him, why? He says, well, they stink. So he gets out, he opens the back of the car, and he sees him spilling the peaches. Then he comes to the side of the car, and he says to the old guy, I'm through. I'm not doing this anymore. So it's a very tense scene, because you don't know what the older guy is going to do. He's not really a shooter. He's not a gangster of that type. He's sort of the negotiator for the toxic waste on the farms. But still in all, you don't know what he's going to do to this guy. You say, well, he says, I'm leaving. Well, what do you mean you're leaving? He says, what, do you think you're better than me? He says, no, I'm just leaving. I don't want to do this kind of work anymore. He says, what are you going to do? He said, without me, you're nothing. You had nothing before you met me. Now, it's in the middle of the country now. There's nowhere for him to go. There's no bus, train, nothing. He says one thing, and the other guy says another, and then he just walks away down the road in a panning shot, and you don't know what the guy is going to do in the car to the last second. You don't know if he's going to run him over, shoot him, or whatever. And the fact of the matter is he doesn't do any of it. It's just a guy who can't take the corruption anymore who walks away. Sure, just like Real Life 101. Right. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. We've covered an awful lot of ground today. I would think that we broke new ground in some ways by talking about the Holmes and Ray Stress Scale, which is a list of stressful life events that can contribute to illness. And they rank death of a spouse as one, number one, two, divorce, three, marital separation, four, being in prison, five, death of a close family member, personal injury next, getting married is a stress, believe it or not, getting fired is the next one. Now, here's an interesting, marital reconciliation is a stress, meaning getting back together is in the top 10. Retiring is a huge stress. Change in health of a family member, big stress. Pregnancy, huge stress. We forget what the women go through bearing a child. It's easy to forget that, particularly in our society, which is so anti-female, particularly anti-normal female. Sexual difficulties, gaining a new family member, meaning having a child or whatever, adopting. How about business downturns? How about a change in financial state? How about a foreclosure on your mortgage or a loan? How about a child leaving home? You know, people don't talk about that much, but when it's not this time of year that it happens, but people, children grow up and leave. Or usually it's when they leave to go to college that people, you know, the empty nest syndrome, go try that one and see what it does to you. That's a 2 to 3 year job to get over that one. And that's the beauty of having a family. I got to tell you, you know, I've been in talk radio for 15 years, since 1994. I came into it by accident. And people said I wouldn't last a day, but here I am 15 years later. And the fact of the matter is, I don't trust anybody in talk radio who doesn't have children. I don't listen to them. I mean, I'm talking about people in talk radio who are talking about family, family values, school, education. I don't trust anybody who doesn't have children. They don't know what they're talking about. If they're single or they've never had children, they're full of you-know-what. They're full of republicanism. That's all I can tell you. But let's put that aside. One of the biggest stresses is a child who you've had in your house for 17, 18 years from the time they were, the time they were a fetus, then an embryo, and then their birth in front of your eyes. Now, we're not talking about dying. We are talking about that human being just leaving you. And there you are with the room with the pennants and the baseball cards, for example. Or the girl leaves you, there it is, the little pink teddy bears are left in the room. Try that one for a year or two and tell me how that feels. We're not talking about throwaway families of the type created in Oakland, California, with turkey basters. We're talking about the traditional American family built upon the bedrock of civilization called the family, the heterosexual married man and woman. That's what we're talking about. There are no racial connotations in this. There are only familial connotations in what I just said to you. It is a very big stress, and it took me, in both cases, 2 to 3 years to adjust to that one. It was a terrible one. But for me, I'm, you know, leveling with you. The biggest stress to me was killing myself while having raising two children, working two jobs, writing books, going to college, going to graduate school, being told one after the other by phony liberal professors that the PhD was a union card, that when you get that union card, you got a golden door waiting for you. And getting a great PhD with almost a 4.0 index out of UC Berkeley, with a great dissertation that was published as a book, and then being told by over 70 colleges that white males need not apply. And now you look at the universities and you understand why they are the way they are today. It's because men like me were locked out, and people like the type you see in the universities were locked in. And now you understand where I am at. I am not complaining to you, nor am I apologizing to you. I am telling you it was God's will. All of my life, I mean, I don't want to go into this long dirge right now, but if I look back on my life, you know, they say don't look back. I try not to look back because it can make you really, you can get dizzy from it. I don't think I could relive what I lived through if I had known what I know now, some of the trials and tribulations I had to go through to get where I am today. I don't think I would have gone through those hoops or jumped through the fire. I don't think so. I think that 15 years ago, I probably would have retired or quit and said enough is enough and goodbye. But frankly, I wasn't able to, because I told you the story of what my son said to me. I had been shafted by a number of social engineers, and I basically couldn't take it anymore. And I said, you know what? I am 50 years old, and I've had enough. I've got enough to live on. If I have to, I'll live a quiet life however many years I have left. I'm not going to do this anymore. And I sat in a little rental house somewhere, and I won't tell you where. And one day my son came home from school, and he saw me sitting in the back of this dark little room that I called a study. It was a study as much as it was a nursery for an infant with hardly a window in it, in a dark room. And he said, what are you doing, Dad? I said, well, I think I'm going to retire. And he said to, he was a kid. He says to me, I don't know, he was 15. He says to me, you can't retire. He says, nobody retires at that age. He said, men retire at 65. You can't retire. I got up and chased him out of the house, asked him if I'm making the story up. I started screaming, how dare you tell me what I can do? Who are you to tell me what I can do? You know what? That's why I'm on the radio. Because if you're lucky enough to have children who are good children, they will both follow and lead the way. And that's why you put in everything you have when the plant is put in the ground. That is why you tend to the plant. That is why you give it the best of water, and that's why you protect it from the wind, and that's why you protect it from insects. It's because that plant bears fruit, and it comes back to sustain you later on in life. Just as the plant of the earth will give you the food, the child of the earth, the child of your earth, the child of your heart, the child of your soul will come back to sustain you. It's exactly what the Bible told you. Should be. It's exactly what the Bible promises you. It's exactly what the Bible offers you. It's exactly what should happen in a lucky break, in a lucky way the dice are thrown. And I wish good luck upon all of you with your children. There's no guarantee in the world we have today, because these values towards the parents in particular are not only not reinforced in the schools today, the opposite is taught to them. The crazy whack jobs in the educational establishment, the deviants in the psychiatric profession actually tell your children that the parents are dysfunctional, whatever that means, meaning you're human, that makes you dysfunctional. It tells them to distrust you. It tells them that if you protect them too much, you're evil. It tells them that everything that you did for them was wrong because they were manipulative in trying to control you, not that they were trying to protect you. That would be like telling the little corn seedling that the farmer was controlling and overly protective because he didn't let the crow eat the seedling. But go tell that to one of your children who has been brainwashed by a liberal whack job psychiatrist or social worker or God knows what else in our society today, which is why I say to you, ladies and gentlemen, on the Savage Nation today, there is a reason to understand that we are now at a crossroads in society and in civilization. We are fighting not only for the survival of America, but for the survival of the family and for the survival of the individual. Barack Hussein Obama, to bring it down to the man, Barack Hussein Obama, frankly, is not very good on any of those counts. Barack Hussein Obama shows every evidence of going against everything I just mentioned to you. Where have you last seen him give a speech supporting the traditional family? Nowhere. Where have you last seen Barack Hussein Obama saying, I am going to make certain that America's borders are secured? Nowhere. Where have you seen Barack Hussein Obama tell you that he's going to support the language or the culture of this nation? Nowhere. We are in real trouble, ladies and gentlemen. And that is why I say go back to the rock of ages. Reinforce yourself. And if millions of us can reinforce ourselves, we can save the world.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It's Blue Monday on the Savage Nation.
Back to work, plan to sleep all deep. Here come Tuesday, oh, Tuesday. I'm so tired, got no time to play.
The perp walk at CPAC. It seems the media is abuzz over the CPAC conference that took place over the weekend in Washington, D.C. At first, when I heard the name CPAC, I thought it sounded like a medication, something to do with hemorrhoids. But no, it stands for the Conservative Political Action Conference. This is where all the inside the beltway so-called check pants conservatives get together and plan strategy. This is where all the check pants Republicans meet to sip Rob Roy's and complain about how horrible the Democrats are and how if only the American people would wake up to how great the Republicans are, then everything would be wonderful again. You see, happy days are here again. A solid 3 days of Republicans good, Democrats bad. And needless to say, yours truly, Michael Savage, was too conservative for the conservative conference. You'd think that after their miserable defeat in November that they would have learned that only real conservatives have a chance of saving this country. Only a more savage nation can survive, but it seems they have learned nothing. The same faces appeared that we have seen for 25 years. The same cabal that sold America out to the Democrats and to China and lost the trust of the nation are back under the new banner of CPAC. Well, listen to this. Here's what they told us. Rush Limbaugh.
As conservatives, what do we do? How do we overcome this? Well, the one thing, and there are many, but one thing that we can all do is stop assuming that the way to beat them is with better policy ideas right now.
Remember the man who couldn't say a bad word about George Bush for 7.5 years? He's back carrying new water for the same old failed ideas. Only he's repositioned himself with a conservative cape. I don't think that that one's going to fly. As they say, pigs don't fly. John Bolton, the former UN ambassador, talked the talk about Iran, but he didn't walk the walk. And so now Iran has enough uranium to build a nuclear bomb. Thumbs down to you, John. Mike Huckabee, he couldn't win the Republican nomination, but now Schmuckabee is back to tell us how to win the White House. Okay, Mike, stick to what you know best, which is malarkey. Mitt Romney?
More than any other time in history, conservative principles are absolutely essential to keeping America strong and prosperous and free.
Like the guy. Remember it last year, CPAC, he dropped out of the presidential race? Now, he could be the next Republican president, but does he still have the fire in the belly, or is there any belly left in the fire? Newt Gingrich?
I wanted to take a few minutes to answer the president and answer his attorney general. And comment on the machine which currently runs the Congress. Let me say, first of all, that we now have more than enough evidence of what this administration thinks of the American people.
Problem with Gingrich is that he has been sold out so many times, we don't know who he is. This guy has too much belly and not enough fire. Ann Coulter?
The theme for the last few months has been that Obama is the
incarnate spirit of Abraham Lincoln. So I guess it's the end of Obama's honeymoon with the press. He's not Jesus anymore. He's just Lincoln.
Is she the lady of the right or lady of the night? You decide. The perp walk is not the future of the conservative movement. These are not people who care about a borders, language, and culture. They did not even mention the words borders, language, or culture. There may be a man on a white horse coming to save America, but he didn't show up at CPAC. We're also going to talk about other topics here in the Savage Nation that are on michaelsavage.com, which I'm not going to read to you now. Many of you just go right to it and see what's up there. But I'm going to talk about something that's very much on my mind, and that is stress. The highest stress in your life, and I'll tell you why. I'm going out of my mind with stress. I'm in the midst of arranging to move across the country, either on Friday or Saturday. I've got to move a number of people, a number of poodles, a number of a number of weapons, and I'm going out of my mind. From 1 minute to the next, I'm waking up 3 a.m. Now, don't forget this, and don't forget that, and don't forget to do this with your boat. Don't to turn off the Seacock. Call up the mechanic, make sure he comes down and do the... What about your car? Do you need a trickle charger? You're not going to be back for 4 or 6 weeks. Make sure that you get the trickle charger. Oh, yes, lock the door, bolt the gate, put on the alarm. Oh, yes, don't forget to pick the vegetables out of the garden and make sure they come in a cooler. You don't want to throw organic. You don't want to throw away organic vegetables. And by the way, did you tell the gardener to turn the water on after the rainstorm because the sun is coming? Did you tell the gardener that? Yes, did you tell? I mean, it's unbelievable to me. So I looked up the Holmes and Ray Stress Scale, which is a list of stressful life events that can contribute to illness. And the number one item on a stress scale that can contribute to illness is the death of a spouse. And it's listed by number of life change units. The highest stress you can have in your life, they say, is the death of a spouse. The next highest stress is divorce. The third highest stress is marital separation. And here it comes. The fourth highest stress is imprisonment, which of course applies to over 1 million Americans. We have more Americans in prison proportionate to the population. We have the highest number of people in prison of any nation on earth, which means we are a police state, which means the drug war failed, which means the drug war needs to end, which means that although marijuana is a toxic, dangerous gateway drug, we need to decriminalize, not legalize, marijuana. There's a big difference between decriminalizing and legalizing, which I'll talk about another time. The fifth highest contributor to illness in terms of a stress on the Holmes and Ray stress scale, remember, number one is the death of a spouse. Number two is divorce. Number three is marital separation. Number four is imprisonment. Number five is death of a close family member. Number six, personal injury or illness. Next, marriage, dismissal from work. Listen to this one. Marital reconciliation is in the top 10. In other words, it's not bad enough you have a stress from breaking up. It gets worse when you get back together. Well, not as worse, but it's another stress. Retirement in the top 10. What other stresses have you experienced in your life that have affected your illness? If you had to rank the worst stresses in your life, what were they? Do you know that on this list, change in residence is number 20. Okay, so thank God I'm on number 20. I'm changing residence right now. I'm moving across the country. Whether it's temporary or permanent is another story, but I'm moving. I have never been through such madness in my adult years. I mean, I've moved before. When I was younger, I moved all the time. It was like the grapes of wrath in order to get a job. I have moving trucks and packing and this and that. It's never been as complicated as now because I'm building a new studio by telephone across the country. Go try to build a radio studio that should be waiting for you in a house that you have acquired in another state. Go try to do that. Luckily, I have some good engineers and good people out there with the equipment ordered 6 weeks ago. But it's astounding to me how complicated this really is. This is the Savage Nation. Be here or be nowhere. Savage. The neo-Marxist media recently told us a record number of our troops committed suicide last year, but they didn't go much into the reasons why. Joining us now is Dr. Peter Breggin, who sees a connection between this rate of suicide and something besides just the strain of war.
Thanks, Michael. Here are the basic facts. Death by suicide is at record levels in the armed services. Simultaneously, the use of antidepressant drugs is also at record levels, including brand names like Prozac, Zoloft, Paxil, and Celexa. According to the Army, in 2007, 17% of combat troops in Afghanistan were taking prescription antidepressants or sleeping pills. Inside sources have given me an even bleaker picture. During Vietnam, a mere 1% of our troops were taking prescribed psychiatric drugs. By contrast, in the past year, one-third of Marines in combat zones were taking psychiatric medications. Are the pills helping? The Army confirms that since 2002, the number of suicide attempts has increased sixfold, and more than 128 soldiers killed themselves last year. One theory states that the increased prescription of drugs is a response to increased depression among the soldiers. In reality, the use of psychiatric drugs escalates when and only when drug companies and their minions target new markets. In this case, the armed services have been pushing drugs as a cheap alternative to taking genuine care of the young men and women in our military. Instead of shortening tours of duty, instead of temporarily removing stressed-out soldiers from combat zones, and instead of providing counseling, the new Army policy is to drug the troops. Meanwhile, many soldiers don't want to take these drugs, and so they avoid seeking any kind of help.
Well, what's the science behind giving antidepressants, especially to troops?
First, antidepressants do not prevent suicide. Second, antidepressants almost never cure depression, and instead they frequently worsen depression. Third, antidepressants never cure biochemical imbalances. Instead, they cause them. There are no known biochemical imbalances in the brains of depressed people until they start taking toxic psychiatric drugs. Conclusion? Antidepressants are a hoax. In this case, a hoax that is killing members of our armed services. FDA approval for an antidepressant requires that the drug companies produce only two positive clinical trials, usually lasting only 4 to 6 weeks, showing that the drug performs better than a sugar pill. So the drug companies carry out numerous studies using their hand-picked researchers, and then back at the headquarters, they manipulate the data until they can make two studies look positive. Meanwhile, when all the studies are examined in what's called a meta-analysis, the antidepressants are no better than a sugar pill. And of course, they are extraordinarily more dangerous. With billions of dollars at stake, the drug companies also do everything they can to downplay the risks of their products. Thus, the pharmaceutical industry failed to find any evidence that antidepressants cause suicidality until the FDA forced them to reevaluate their old data. The result? Now the FDA requires a black box warnings that antidepressants increase the suicide risk in children, youth, and young adults. That is, these people who take the drugs will have more suicidal behavior than the people taking a sugar pill. Limiting the risk to that age group, of course, you know, children, youth, and young adults, is nonsense. These drugs cause suicidality in all ages.
Is suicide the only risk in taking antidepressants?
Michael, many of the most common side effects involve overstimulation. As officially listed by the FDA, these negative effects include, and I'm quoting from the FDA now, anxiety, agitation, panic attacks, insomnia, irritability, hostility, aggressiveness, impulsivity, and mania. You heard it right. We are giving our troops drugs that provide a prescription for uncontrolled, disinhibited violence, including agitation, irritability, impulsivity, hostility, and aggressiveness. In my latest book, Medication Madness, I describe dozens of dramatic cases in which peace-loving citizens have become violent for the first time in their lives after taking antidepressant drugs like Prozac, Paxil, and Zoloft. What then must these drugs be doing to overstressed young soldiers?
Seems strange to give soldiers drugs that may make them act in ways they normally wouldn't act. Is it risky to just stop taking these horrible drugs?
Yes, Michael, as dangerous as it is to take antidepressant drugs, people should not rush into stopping them. After being exposed to these chemical agents for months or years, many people undergo agonizing emotional and physical withdrawal reactions. Withdrawal from psychiatric drugs should be done gradually with experienced clinical supervision and the supportive help of family and friends.
But what help do you feel depressed people need?
Michael, depression is a loss of hope. Depressed people are unable to see any ethical or viable options that will bring them happiness. They feel that anything they will do is bad or doomed. They feel stymied, even emotionally paralyzed, because every choice seems bleak or overwhelming. They have given up. That's why in the extreme they sometimes want to die and they sometimes hurt themselves. They feel utterly helpless and hopeless in regard to making good lives for themselves. The restoration of hope is key to overcoming depression, and hope can come from many sources. The alternative to antidepressants is really all of life. Romantic love, family, friends, community, hard work, nature, religion, and God all help people overcome depression. In fact, scientific studies show that everything from a new pet to an exercise program, as well as the passage of time, can relieve depression. I explain to my patients, you've lost faith in your life. You've lost faith that you will ever love anyone or anything again. Getting over your depression will require pushing through your conflicts and fears and finding the courage to love again, to love people, creative work, nature, life, and God. Modern biological psychiatry reflects and reinforces the worst in human values. Instead of liberating the spirit of overburdened and overwhelmed people, psychiatry denies and rejects the human spirit. It makes up fake biochemical theories that make people feel more helpless. Most tragically, modern psychiatry then subdues the spirit by blunting the functions of the brain. And by the way, this makes it even more difficult for people to figure their way out of depression. The principles for overcoming depression are exactly the same principles required for living a good and happy life. The very same principles expressed by our founding fathers. Depressed people have lost faith in their inalienable rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Good counseling offers an enthusiastic approach that inspires hope while helping individuals to understand and to overcome their psychological barriers to the exercise of their personal freedom, to taking charge of their lives, and to pursuing their own happiness. Now, I'm not talking about unleashing a narcissistic approach. That kind of self-centeredness is more characteristic of depression itself. I'm talking about a wholehearted embracing of life in which individuals overcome hopelessness and helplessness and renew their determination to take responsibility and to contribute to family and community. You can find me and listen to all of these reports at Breggin.com. That's Breggin.com.
Thanks, Dr. Breggin. Maybe more doctors should look for answers beyond the pill. I'll be right back.
Blue Monday, how are you, Blue Monday? Got to work, flag or sleeve all day.
Have no fear, the Messiah, our leader, B.O., is going to solve the mortgage crisis. What's his new plan? Well, your tax dollars will go to help people who are having problems keeping up with their payments. Where's the money going to come from? Well, the people who have been keeping up and doing the right thing will be paying for those who haven't been keeping up and doing the wrong thing. It sounds fair, doesn't it? Well, as I said, trickle-up poverty. Didn't I warn you about this? Welcome to the Socialist States of America. Joining us today from the Heritage Foundation is David John, whose latest piece outlines 12 problems with Obama's mortgage plan. David John, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's your opinion of what's going on here?
Thanks, Michael. What's going on is that the Obama administration has felt bound to determine that they have to do something about the mortgage problem. This is something that Congress tried to deal with in an utter disaster last year, and now the Obama people have decided to take their cut at it. Now, what they proposed was a fairly detailed plan. They learned the hard way not to do just broad talking points. But as a result, there are just a huge number of problems with what they're proposing. The biggest problem, when it comes right down to it, is that they are asking those 91% of us who pay our mortgages on time, who have scrimped, saved, and sacrificed to keep our mortgages current, to help with our neighbors who refinance their home for a swimming pool or to take a European vacation or something like that and then got themselves into trouble. So the biggest, most impressive problem of this is that this sends a message to our kids and our grandkids that you won't have to bear responsibility for your own actions because somebody, probably from the government, will come and bail you out and make sure that you don't have any real problems in meeting your obligations. That's probably first and foremost. What they did with this was, first off, to give you a brand new right. They said that if you have a mortgage and your mortgage is, quote, underwater, which means that you owe more on your house than the mortgage is at the moment, that you can then go through and refinance your mortgage, even if that means that it's going to be done under bad underwriting standards. In other words, right now you have to have 80% max, you have to owe 80% or less on your house to refinance your house. And they're saying you can owe 105%, 110% of the current value of your house, and we'll still let you refinance it. They also have other ways that they're proposing here through something they call a stability initiative, which allows individuals to reduce their mortgage payments by having the interest rate reduced or stretching the mortgage out to, say, 40 years from 30 years or something like that. So it's a maximum of 31% of your take-home pay that would go to the mortgage. Now, the problem with all of this, and there are a lot of more details here and there, but the biggest problem with this is that we have a record already of people who have their mortgages refinanced and then run into problems. For instance, if you have someone who has a mortgage and it's 4 months past due at the time that it's refinanced, 80% of those refinanced mortgages go bad again. If it's a 1 month past due, 60% of those mortgages go bad again within 12 months. So essentially, they're using somewhere in the neighborhood of $275 billion of taxpayer dollars to refinance mortgages. And the vast majority of the ones that they're going to refinance are going to end up running delinquent again, and people are going to be in just as much problem as they have been in the past. This is not a good way to deal with public policy.
A big part of the problem seemed to be how they lowered the standards of who was able to get these loans. How does this part make any sense whatsoever?
It doesn't make sense, and this is one of the problems. One of the reasons that people got into the trouble that they did was that banks and finance companies and the like lowered their lending standards. So basically, if you could walk, talk, and breathe, the odds are you could get a mortgage of some form or another. And what they're doing in this case also is further lowering the lending standards. So, for instance, we won't see the exact operating details until March 6th. That's when the Obama people promises that they'll be out. But from looking at industry practice and the way this thing looks, it appears that someone could have total debt payments, including credit card, auto loans, house, and other things, as much as 55% of their income, and then turn around and refinance their homes again. This is poor credit standards, and it's one of the reasons why you have such a high proportion of these loans that are refinanced and then go bad again. It's just won't work. Now, there is another factor on this, and this is something that Congress is looking at right now, as a matter of fact, which is that they want bankruptcy judges to be able to go through and say, as part of a bankruptcy settlement, it's something called Chapter 13, that the judge can readjust what your mortgage is worth. So if you've got a house that you bought at $200,000 and you have a mortgage that's $180,000 and the house is worth $150,000 right now, the judge could turn around and say, well, your mortgage is now $150,000. Now, that keeps the individual in the house, assuming that they can actually keep up with the terms of Chapter 13. And actually, a large majority of people who file Chapter 13 end up not being able to meet those terms. But what the judge would be able to say after he's redone this is, we're going to readjust your mortgage. Now, what happens in the long run, however, and this is a case of short-run gain, long-term disaster, is that the financial services industry is going to look at this and they're going to see yet another area of risk in these mortgages, because now they not only have the risk that you won't repay the mortgage, they're going to have the risk that the bankruptcy judge is going to alter the mortgage to fit the bankruptcy judge's needs. And that's going to have to be priced into future mortgages. And the estimate is that's going to increase mortgage costs by somewhere around 2 percentage points. So if you had a 6% mortgage before, mortgages now would be 8%. And that's not going to hit everybody across the board. It's especially going to hit higher risk home buyers. And those are like first-time home buyers or people with moderate income. So the very people that the liberals claim that they want to hurt, or help, excuse me, Freudian slip there, the very people that the liberals claim they want to help would be hurt by this proposal.
We're rewarding people for making the wrong choices. Who would benefit most from this?
Well, the people who are going to benefit the most from this in the corporate world are probably going to be the fly-by-night mortgage brokers who realize that they could get a fee by originating a mortgage, and they didn't care. Again, if you could breathe, you could probably get a mortgage, and they got their money by selling it into the mortgage syndication market, which put them together in bonds and sold the bonds to banks and pension funds and things like that. These are the people who shouldn't have made these mortgages in the first place. And these are the people who are going to get the reward, because the mortgage will be refinanced rather than having to come back and look at, force these people to look at what they've done.
So much for the carrot and the stick analogy.
It's a carrot and the bigger carrot when it comes right down to it. It is precisely the kind of incentive we don't want to give to our kids. We want to teach our kids and our grandkids that you must bear the consequences of your actions, and therefore you better think before you act. What this says, it doesn't matter how stupid a decision you made, we'll bail you out.
We already have two generations of debt here. How much will this add?
This adds on $275 billion. There's $75 billion that directly subsidizes people with bad mortgages. In addition, there's $200 billion that go to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, which used to be public-private mortgage giants. They failed last year, and now they're arms of the federal government. So essentially, we're talking about another quarter of $1 trillion here. That puts the total up into many more trillions of dollars than I ever imagined that I'd be talking about.
In practice, do you think this will work?
The fact is, this will not work in practice, because the Obama people claim that this is going to help between 7 and 9 million Americans with problem mortgages. The problem we face right now is that mortgage brokers who would handle these transactions are already swamped with people who have good credit and want to refinance their house to take advantage of historically low interest rates. The people who have scrimped and saved and paid their mortgages and have always paid everything on time. So what's going to happen is Obama's people will pass this program. And the estimate on this is that, from one very reputable economics firm, that instead of 7 to 9 million people, if they're lucky, they'll help 1 million people. So that's 1 million people helped at $75 billion cost. That's a pretty bad deal.
Well, I agree. Too much money spent and too few people help. We don't need more debt. David John, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Thanks for having me. I've enjoyed this.
This is the Savage Nation. Savage. You know, in spite of Obama's porkulous bill, in spite of the trillion-dollar bailout of the banks, in spite of the fact that AIG just received another $30 billion from you, the taxpayer, by the way, who is AIG? Which pig is getting that money? Well, the stock market dropped by 300 points today. The Dow is now below 7,000 points. All 30 stocks that make up the Dow Jones Industrial Average were down. This is the lowest the stock market has dropped in 12 years. What do the neo-Marxists want to do about it? They want to get down and have a good dance on Wednesdays. They want to have Stevie Wonder in the White House and just have a great old time on Wednesday. They took over America while the economy is tanking. All they can talk about is spending more money and they don't have it. What are the Republicans doing about it? Well, they say that we can't take the idea of nationalizing the banks off the table. And while we certainly don't want to have to do it, maybe we could just nationalize the banks for a short time and then give them back, and that would be all right. Oh, and while we hate every last one of those Democrat earmarks, the ones that we put in there are okay because they have an R after them, and they're for real Americans. I don't know if we need a neo-Marxist Democrat Party or a liberal Republican Party. They've let this country fall apart, and they don't know how to put it back together again. Humpty Dumpty has had a great fall. They've destroyed our financial borders by selling us out to China for cheap labor and cheap parts. And for oil interests in the Middle East, they've destroyed our economic language by forbidding the use of the term Buy American, if it actually means Buy American. Do you know that even Obama's new Marine One helicopters are no longer made in the US of A? Do you understand that? We need a national party that caters to the interests of the nation, not to the interests of George Soros and the Warren Buffetts. Put power back in the hands of real working American citizens and take it back from the puppet masters before you wind up on a string. Well, something I talked about recently was China Inc. If you remember, we went through this with Japan in the 1980s, and there was great concern that the Japanese were buying up America, buying up the technology, if you remember. But then at the end of the day, the Yankees, that means us, outsmarted the Japanese. And so we said, well, all of our fears have been allayed. We can only hope that the same thing will go on this time. That China, which is drunk with cash because of quislings within our government, is now trying to buy up America. December 04, a completed deal. China bought IBM, U.S. personal computer business. Did you know that? No, you didn't know that. June 11, 01, China bought the Hyundai display technology out of South Korea for $650 million. In October of 03, China bought oil and gas assets from the Australian company, Gorgon Liquefied Natural Gas. They bought a whole gas field for $700 million. In January of 2002, China bought Reposol YPF, an Indonesian oil field, for $591 million. So they're gobbling up natural resources. They're gobbling up manufacturing know-how. They're buying up brands. They're buying up distribution. They're buying up technology. And they're doing it because they have massive amounts of capital, including massive amounts of low-cost credit lines, because they're rolling in cash. Now, the reason they're rolling in cash, you well know. There's a number of factors involved. We don't have to go into it. We've been screaming about it for years, and the government sold on so-called free trade, but we all know that that's a big lie. There is no such thing as free trade when you don't have an even playing field, and we don't. When you have 9 million people in slave labor camps in China producing goods, along with people working for a dollar a day, that's not free trade. That's unfree trade. But, you know, they don't tell you that. You can have free trade when you have more or less the same wages in each country. Then you can have free trade. But without it, you need protection. And America needs protection today. It needs protection yesterday. But we're not about to get it. So, should we let China buy our Defense Department, too? Or in fact, why not have our ships made by China and our bullets? Did you know that the U.S. military buys some of its ammunition from China? Did you hear that one? Did you know that or you don't know that yet? Well, I'll tell you that one. Oh, yeah, we have China making. I have some of the ball ammo myself when I bought it about 5 years ago. I have .223 ball ammo. It was made in China. along with American-made ammunition. I never used the stuff, but I looked at it. I said, no wonder it's so cheap. It's coming from China. I found that they make it for the U.S. military. How do you like that? All right, play Blue Monday.
Blue Monday. I hear Blue Monday.
It's insane. Only a more savage nation can survive, and here we've turned to the left. Ah.
Here come Tuesday. Oh, Tuesday. I'm so tired, got no time to play.
Well, here's what's on MichaelSavage.com. Iran has enough uranium to build a nuclear bomb. Really? That's interesting. And, of course, the U.S. is saying it would be a very, very bad outcome should Iran move towards a bomb. I wonder how this is affecting the Hollywood idiots who are licking Ahmadinejad's feet, who is demanding an apology from them for having lived in a democracy that permitted them to be idiotic actors who make a fortune for doing nothing. But the point is, Iran has enough uranium to build a nuclear bomb, and the U.S. has nothing to do. Israel has nothing to do. I'm sick and tired of hearing about Iran and the bomb. How about you? Topic two. The growing economic crisis threatens the idea of one Europe. Apparently, the unified Europe is breaking apart. It was a bad idea to begin with. The people were against it. They didn't want to give up their borders, language, and culture. The elites of Europe said, come along with us. Let's have a new European Union, and guess what? It's now breaking up. Welcome to the real world. One of the biggest stories, and really shocking and frightening, is that in England, the leader of England is saying that Obama should bail out England and Europe as well. If we do not stop Obama from his messianic madness, this man will see himself as the Messiah of the world. And don't forget for one minute, Obama lied, the economy died. Earmarks are us. Here's a guy who came to power saying there'd be no earmarks. You remember the BS he gave during the campaign? The biggest liar in the history of the presidency, 6,000 earmarks. He's getting away with it for one reason, because he's a man of color and because no one's ever said no to him from the time he was a child. And frankly, I am sick of it. There is not a politician in America who could get away with this. Obama's getting away with it because the media is terrified of being called the R word. Speaking of Obama's corrupt appointees, Obama's urban czar, from the New York Daily News now on MichaelSavage.com, he picked an urban czar, I love that name, urban czar, well, he's tied to kickbacks in the Bronx. If that's not enough for you, let's go down the list. Dying liberal newspapers want to become nonprofits. Do they want to get government porculous spending? How would that be? Well, then we'd have the Soviet Union completely. We'd have Izvestia or Pravda. And, of course, they'd have to go through Barney Frank with the headlines. If that's not bad enough, if you go down on MichaelSavage.com, well, it gets worse. I can't even read it to you. Is there anything positive? If you missed my audio of I and Thou, Ish and Do, you're not going to believe it. Martin Buber's great book, important book, I and Thou. I talked about it Friday. And it's about why Hollywoodies don't believe in God. That's my word, Hollywoodies. I think you get the picture. Why don't Hollywoodies believe in God? Since there's no I, there could be no thou. If there's no I and no thou, there could be no I and God. No relationship with God. You wind up like Sean Penn worshiping Fidel Castro and other dictators. That's what's on MichaelSavage.com. This is The Savage Nation. With God's will and your listenership, I shall return.